When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. The topic this week is a very serious and sobering one.
4 young people a week are impacted by suicide, and those numbers are going up.
I talked with Joanna Johnson, Training Manager of Grassroots Suicide Prevention, and Lucy Skillen, Mental Health Lead and Teacher at the Holy Family High School, about teenage and young person suicide. This is an important topic, so please do stay tuned. I thought a good place to start on the topic of teenagers and young person suicide would be to ask my guests the extent of the problem, if they can quantify it, and also if the problem is getting worse.
So I'll tackle that one if you like, Lucy, and then if you wanted to add, please feel free. But I would like to point out that we know that suicide in young people is increasing. We're looking at an average of 200 people a year, so you're looking around 4 young people a week are impacted by suicide. Those numbers are going up. It's seen as a priority on the England Suicide Prevention Strategy from the government, so they've recognised this. And I think it's important to note when we're talking about statistics, each individual young person is, you know, they're a human being and loved ones around them who are impacted. I'm a former teacher. I've seen firsthand the devastation this can cause, and it's such a tragedy. It's horrific. So we need to do something about it.
So that, just repeat that statistic, because yeah, that was quite a sobering one.
Yes, yeah, so around 200 young people a year. So around 4 young people a week. We know that male suicides are higher than females, but what we are finding is female suicides are increasing. So for example, on average, you're looking at males and females. Males are about 3 times as high as females, but you are then, there are certain ages in females that we know, certain demographics, that it is going up. So it's, again, and we know that self-harm.
And does that tend to be teenagers?
It can be different. It can be teenagers. It can be perinatal, sadly. It can be women who are slightly older, perhaps in what we call a sandwich generation, where they're sandwiched between elderly parents, jobs, young teenagers, and they've got the menopause going on. So there are certain pockets demographically that are higher. And we know that rates of female self-harm are going up. And I don't know, Lucy, if that's reflected in your day-to-day sort of role within the school, but we're certainly finding females are self-harming young people has increased.
You're finding self-harm at school is on the up, Lucy?
Yeah, so for us, we were seeing self-harm, we were seeing anxiety, low mood in year 10 and year 11. Post-COVID, we're now seeing it right the way through each and every year group. We have our feeder schools telling us that actually it's getting worse there as well. So we know that the young people who are coming to us in year 7, aged 11, have already experienced some of these, or their families are presenting with them as well. So there's definitely a rise.
So, I mean, this is probably an impossible question, unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. What on earth is going on? I mean, it's not in my world. Well, generally it's not in my world. So, you know, over to you.
It's come. So I think, sorry, Lucy, go on. Yeah, do you want to do your reflection? I'll do the sort of, yeah, go.
So for me, I'm in South Sefton. So I'm in South Sefton in Liverpool. We've seen a big rise there in terms of poverty. So at the moment, 10% of our areas are in poverty, and it's been always that way, higher than the English amount. So 38 areas in Sefton fall within the most deprived areas, and that's where the majority of our young people are coming from. We know that alcohol increase is on the rise. We know that bullying has been on the rise. And we also know that there's been cuts in local services. So there's now less youth services than there were in the past. And we're also seeing mental health of parents is increasingly worse through unemployment. And I think all of those factors add to how a young person is feeling and taking on that stress.
God, I mean, that is a toxic list right there of things that can make a young person's life not so great, obviously. Joanna, it looks like you wanted to add.
Yeah, what I would say with them, a lot of people think that suicide is down to one factor, but what I would always emphasise, it's complicated. It can be complicated what's going on internally, what's happening externally, etc. And I think, you know, it's those factors can be happening, but it's also the amount of loss or pain that somebody associates with what's happening to them as well. And what experiences they've been through. I mean, we know suicidal thoughts are really, really common, as we've mentioned. People don't like being in pain. They don't like suffering in whatever the context is. So it's not people are choosing to die, but they may want to escape from that pain that's happening in their lives. And that's why suicide becomes an option. What's important, and what we certainly do with the initiative, it's really important if somebody's got these factors happening in their life, and we are concerned about them, that we reach out and ask them clearly and directly if they're having thoughts of suicide. And that has been shown to open the door for them. So they almost say, oh, actually, yeah, I can seek help. This person has recognised that I'm suffering, so I can get the help. And that's
really so, well, that leads very nicely onto the scheme that you're running, I believe, to try and help the situation. So what is that scheme? And who is it aimed at?
So the Breaking the Silence initiative is a UK first. It hasn't been done before, where we're looking at peer-on-peer support. We know young people in these contexts are going through all sorts of things, and we want them to come to us, but chances are they're talking to each other, whether that's online or offline. So the idea behind Grassroots Suicide Prevention Breaking the Silence initiative is that we equip them with the skills to do so. So they will talk to each other. We teach them how to respond in terms, not so they have to be counsellors, just spotting signs in each other. And so they will come forwards earlier. If they're concerned about themselves or someone else, they'll come to us and say, look, we're worried about them. They may need some help.
My experience of teenagers, having been one, and also I've got a 20-year-old and a 15-year-old, is that they are generally pretty sharp, actually, probably sharper than we give them credit for. So I suspect they kind of know amongst their peers more than we might realise who is having trouble. They might not know why, and they might even know why if they know a bit better, but they will know who's not feeling great, won't they?
Yeah, that's exactly that. And that's what we want to tap into, to be honest, Mike, because we know some of the activities that we do, for example, in the sessions about, you know, are about getting to know you, talking to each other, listening. But what we want is them to go a step further and actually identify perhaps where somebody does need that support and comes forward and actually seeks help if they're having thoughts of suicide. So it's, we know they're keeping an eye on each other. We know we're talking to each other, but it's really important that they also come forward if they're concerned about, and say, themselves or somebody else.
So the idea is that they kind of mention it, that a friend of theirs or someone they know is in trouble, as opposed to that actual person trying to get help for themselves.
Yeah, can be. I mean, it could be themselves as part of the session. Somebody might recognise them themselves. But as it is peer-on-peer support, so young people talking to each other, yeah, we want them to spot signs and say, actually, I'm concerned about my mate. I'm really worried about him. This is the sort of thing he's been saying. He's not quite been himself or herself, and I'm worried about them. And then we can reach out and give the support that's needed.
So can you give some examples of the sort of thing that a peer might notice about one of their friends?
So it's important to contextualise, because obviously these are teenagers, so there could be things that they're going through that are quite, you know, just them being a teenager. But things with young people, they could be withdrawn, they could be, you know, they're usually quite socially engaged. They might be getting angry a lot and lashing out a lot. They might be expressing language like, I'm fed up, I'm a burden, I can't do enough. Or feel like they're not achieving what they should and feeling that sense of failure. There might be things about them that you think, actually, they're not quite right. Lucy, from your perspective, I mean, what, you know, the young people that you support, are there things that you've seen that you would say were signs for you?
Yeah, so I think for us, we've seen changes in behaviour. So we've seen, you know, young people might be starting to give things away. They might be starting to be a lot more complimentary about the people around them and how much they've helped them. So kind of the language that they're using. Self-harm, cutting behaviours. I would say for our young girls, it's more a drastic change in mood. So, you know, staff might be noticing, teachers might be noticing, you know, what this young person isn't themselves. They seem very up and down recently. It could be that they're isolating themselves a lot more, that they're just feeling very hopeless, that they've got no hope. They're often saying, you know, there's no point in school because I'm not going to be here or I don't want to be here.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Can you just tell me a little bit more about the self-harm? Because, I mean, that is something that I have seen, actually, with people that seem completely switched on and fine and with it. And I've never really got that. What might make someone self-harm? What's the kind of... Again, probably an impossible question. What's the objective that they have here?
Well,
I think it's important to say as well that, you know, not every young person who self-harms turns to suicide. Often self-harm is a coping mechanism. So it's not because they want attention and it's not because, you know, it's the only way that they can do it. It's that they don't know how to process the feelings that they are experiencing. They feel a loss of control. And therefore, by self-harming, they feel that it brings with it a sight of relief. But actually, you know, we know that scientifically it is about a 90-second release. So if you are cutting yourself, there is 90 seconds that you feel better. That is then followed by guilt, by embarrassment, by dismay. So we know that it's not a healthy strategy. But unfortunately, lots of our young people are using it because peers are using it, because they see it on social media. And unfortunately, it is on the rise.
What do you think about just banning, this is slightly off topic, but I think it might be part an important question, just banning phones from schools?
So what I would say, just coming back to, I will come on to the phone issue, but in terms of self-harm itself, the reason that on a biological sense as well is that our nervous systems are designed to cope with everyday ups and downs. But when someone self-harms, it's because their nervous system is out of sync. They're really anxious or they're really flat and it's to bring it back where it should be. Now, we know, as Lucy said, self-harm can act as a coping mechanism. It can actually bring people back so they're calm and it serves a need. But over longer term, or if they're using more lethal methods, it can be one of the biggest predictors of suicide over longer term. So it's complicated. It's not as straightforward as self-harm leads to suicide. So shorter term, as Lucy said, it can act as a cope, but longer term, it can be an issue. In terms of phones, yeah, there is obviously a debate going on with this. I used to work with someone who is basically someone we brought into the school as part of the PSHE scheme. And he said it's more important to inform and educate than it is to ban. But, you know, this is a debate for schools. When you're looking at young people, this could, in fact, during COVID, it was one of the main ways young people kept in touch with each other and can communicate with each other. So it's not an easy answer as an outright ban. Schools have to take individual decisions on that. But I think it's important that we encourage young people to have responsible use, that we inform them and educate them and what that looks like. Lucy, from your perspective, I don't know if you have a different view on that.
Yeah. I mean, for us as a school, it's something that we've talked about. It's something that we've considered. But we need to be realistic at the same time. We have a lot of parents telling us that they find it difficult to control their behaviours at home. And, you know, if we suggest them take the phones off, you know, it causes more issues. And I think for a school as well, we don't want to seem that we're punishing the young people because, you know, the online world for them is what they're used to. And, you know, in lots of terms, it's very useful. We're also moving to a point in our education system where a lot of learning is online. So to remove the phone, you're taking away what young people are used to. You're taking away the apps, the revision methods. So it's incredibly difficult, but what we know is that during the school day, young people are much better without their phones. They're not able to contact parents and tell them about how anxious they are and tell them about how actually they're really struggling. The young people are then forced to have those conversations with ourselves, and then we can mediate between the young person and the parent. Right. So it's a difficult one.
That's a good point. And that's probably, we could have a whole series on that in the future. Kids and phones, but back to the kind of the topic now. If a child at school thinks one of their friends, someone in their group, is in trouble, or you know they've just noticed a change in behaviour, the kind of thing you've been discussing, what next? Because actually, in a peer group, for whatever reason, if one of them kind of breaks rank and goes and talks to teacher, that doesn't always go down very well. Never mind what the topic is about. I mean, what next?
Well, the actual resources, that was the whole basis of the resources. So we worked with Nice Media Production to put together a professional media clip. And the whole basis of the clip, which the teaching resources are based around, is about a dilemma. And the dilemma is, should I tell, shouldn't I tell? And young people love a drama, so it was it has hooked them. You know, it has engaged them in terms of that dramatic delivery, and that's what we.
So what's this? This is like a short film that's on smartphones, is it?
It's a short film that's central to the Breaking the Silence resources. So what the reason it's called Breaking the Silence is twofold. One is that we want to break the silence of talking about suicide and opening up and reduce the stigma, because you know that's really important to make sure people get help. But the other aspect of it is the actual lesson itself, which is about breaking the silence of a young person coming forward and saying they're concerned about a mate. So the whole drama, the drama that we use as part of the lessons, unpicks that with the young people. And we look at what should you, shouldn't you, what happens if you do, what happens if you come forward. And what we found in every session, the young people have come out at the end saying, we need to tell because we could save a life.
All right. So a young person goes ahead and tells their form teacher, whoever they choose to tell. What happens next? Because then this is a massive responsibility. It could just be, you know, their favourite teacher or the first teacher they bump into. Suddenly that teacher has got a massive responsibility on their shoulders. What on earth do they do?
Yeah, so they would follow our school safeguarding procedures. So they would contact our designated safeguarding lead. So we've got online services in which you can log that information, and you can also go and speak to that member of staff face to face. Then it's taken over
by an online service. You log that information. That sounds doesn't sound terribly proactive. That sounds like I've done my bit. Right, thank you. Job done. No. Over to you.
So when you are logging it online, it is to make sure that we've got all of the information. And then as a member of staff, it is your responsibility to then follow that up with a face-to-face conversation with the safeguarding lead or one of the pastoral staff. So we are used to receiving referrals. We also have an online system called the Sharp system, which is on our school website, which young people and parents can access anonymously. Right. And they can put their concerns on there, and then that is followed up by one of the pastoral team.
I've got a, this might sound a bit negative, it's not meant to, right? I'm 59. Sometimes I think doing all this stuff online, it's like inviting a drunk to the pub to talk about their problems. I mean, because sometimes the problems are set off because of online things. You know, the solution isn't necessarily online as well. I know it's different people involved, but
yeah, so there are different.
Tell me no, I'm wrong.
Yeah,
no, there's different methods. So in our school, you can talk to a member of staff face to face. You can fill out a piece of paper with the information on, because it's got specific questions on there to make sure that you've gathered the information. A lot of the time that staff is just the messenger, so once they've had that initial disclosure, it is then taken on by a member of staff who's got much more experience.
Right, and so that member of staff who's now sorting out the problem, do they call home, not go and visit home? What's next?
Yes, so they would always make a call to home.
Okay.
If there's
that's not going to solve the problem necessarily.
No, but what you're there to do is to make sure they get support if they need it. I mean, what I would say is if there's imminent danger or imminent threat to life, and you know, to the person is at risk to themselves, at risk to others, and you certainly don't put yourself at risk, then the emergency services are called. So there will be there are protocols in place for that as well. And I mean, I certainly from the school, when I was a teacher, and I used to run a drop-in for both students and young staff, so they could come and talk face to face. As Lucy said, it's a holistic provision, not just you fill in a form. There are other avenues, other services that people can put in place there. And that person, that teacher, is not there to solve. They might not be able to solve that young person's problems. But what they can do is make sure that they're directed to the help that they need. So they're not there to be. They don't have to be clinical psychologists or experts. Mental health practitioners, what they do need to do is literally, and what we found with the evidence, ask them the question, open up and just listen whilst taking care of themselves as well. It's important that they do, you know, seek support for themselves and then work collaboratively with that young person so that they actually do get support and they get help. And that can be
So this is all sort of in process happening in schools throughout the land, is it? Or a few schools? What?
No, it's basically, we've been working in partnership with Liverpool John Moores University, looking at academic research. So the workshops have formed part of that research. It came from Australia originally as a model, the multimodal approach to suicide prevention in schools. And they're looking at peer-on-peer support, and they're looking at suicide prevention in schools. So it's aligned with that academic research. It's been piloted as part of the research. A, to pilot the resources, because we involved young people, mental health professionals, educators. We involved lots of people in the development of the package, Breaking the Silence. And it was used as part of the academic team's follow-up on this.
Right.
And so it's now, we're saying to schools, right, here you go. Here's, you know, we want to give the resources to schools for free. We've been very fortunate to be funded by David Riddell Memorial, they want to support suicide prevention to design these resources. And the aim was always schools could have them for free, because there is a potential here to save young lives.
Yeah. So have you had quite, you know, a good take up, schools wanting to get involved?
We've only got the schools who've taken part in the academic research and the pilots, so we're launching them now. This is what we're doing this week.
Right.
But we've had all the schools I've been in. I've delivered to over 1,000 pupils. And every school there have been, well, Lucy knows from her own experiences where I delivered it there as part of the research. Every teacher, our store lead and the students have all said, we're really glad this has been delivered. Yes, we want this in schools. The young people themselves have said, even if they don't need it, the skills now, they may need them later on in life. And it's been, you know, that we do a quick snapshot of confidence levels, and they've gone up every single session with young people in terms of knowing how to spot signs, how to respond and when to come forward.
So within the pilot, is there evidence that actually, yeah, this is a good way to go, this is working, this is doing some good?
Within our pilot, in terms of the snapshot, the academic research, obviously, they've got their findings, they've got to collate and peer review. But those initial sessions, the pilot sessions, every single session, those confidence levels have gone up, where they look at the start, well, do I know what to say, what to do, how to go about this? We do it again at the end of the session, and that snapshot, every single one, it's gone up. The young people themselves were spoken to, and they've said, yeah, we really do want to learn about this. We really value it. We've had excellent feedback from parents who know it's happening because they are made aware. The whole school community is made aware, and they've all been really very, very positive and really want this to happen because they know how important it is.
Good. All right. Well, I think probably the last question has to be, if a young person or, you know, an older person and who knows a younger person and they've noticed some of these signs that you've mentioned and they're worried, or maybe a young person is worried about themselves, where can they go for help right now, you know, this afternoon? What can they do?
So I'm going to recommend an online resource, which is free, which is Grassroots Suicide Prevention Stay Alive app, which has up to 900 resources, translates into 22 different languages. And if you're concerned about yourself or someone else, it is there. It's recommended by the NHS Patient Safety Panel. And on there, people can select, you know, go-tos. There's a safety plan where they can save the crisis line. So it's like a toolkit in their pocket. So straight away, they can have that. Lucy?
And okay, so that...
Sorry, Matt.
I was going to say that that's an app they can download. Yes. Give us the name of it again.
Stay Alive app. Grassroots Suicide Prevention Stay Alive app.
Okay. I interrupted you. You were just about to say something else.
No, I was just going to say if Lucy wanted to add. Sorry, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah, so one of the ones that we signpost to our young people who are also involved in the trial is Papyrus Prevention of Young Suicide. So they have a 24/7 hope line, which is 0800 068 4141. They can access support on that, and on the phone is a trained professional. So as a school, we did some fundraising for them because every phone call costs £20, and that's the payment for the person who is professional and on the other line. But also for young people, Childline is a fantastic resource. I would also say Shout, and also we've got our crisis team in Alderhay, which is run by CAMHS. Right.
So there are quite a few resources. You gave a telephone number, Lucy. Could you please give that one more time?
Yeah, it's 0800 068 4141.
Excellent. Goodness me, this is a very sobering, serious topic, but it sounds like one that needs to be addressed. So thank you very much to you, Lucy and Joanna, for coming and talking about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for supporting this. We really appreciate it. If there is any more information, everything is freely available on our website as well, Mike. So that's prevent-suicide.org.uk, all of the information we discussed this morning.
Excellent. Thank you very much again.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were Joanna Johnson, Training Manager of Grassroots Suicide Prevention, and Lucy Skillen, Mental Health Lead and Teacher at the Holy Family High School. Thank you very much to you for listening, and please do have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.